Welcome to the Ignite Your Life podcast. Here we interview successful people who are living a life filled with adventure, excitement, and fun. Learn where they've been. Explore where they are going. See what gets them out of bed in the morning. Find out what drives them. We will go through their lowest points. We will look at the opportunities and possibilities that are now presenting to them. Come on a journey of ignition. I'm your host, Leanne Blaney. For more information, go to ignitepodcast.com. Let's ignite. Devorah Cutler-Rubenstein's career spans decades of creating on a number of media platforms. Known as Devo, she has been a stand-up, a poet, an author, a studio exec, a painter, an executive producer, and a dedicated educator, teaching at USC and UCLA Extension, among others. As a member of the WGA since 1982, she has worked for television and written feature films. Her documentary Not Afraid to Laugh, which she co-wrote with her husband, Scott Rubenstein, about turning to comedy to heal herself of breast cancer, was nominated for a Peabody and is archived in the Museum of Broadcasting for Social Relevance and Historical Significance. She co-wrote the book Dating Your Character, a new character-based writing tool. Devo has dedicated her life and heart to challenging people's perceptions about their world, themselves, and their relationships. Hi, Devo. Welcome to the Ignite Your Life podcast.
Hi, how are you? Nice to meet you over the airwaves.
Yeah, I know. It's so exciting. I really look forward to you sharing your story. So shall we get started?
Sure, absolutely. Thank you for your time.
Oh, you're welcome. So do you want to tell us a bit about where you are now? What's actually happening for you right now?
Such a great question, always to ask what's happening in the moment. I'm very excited about the Thousand Ripples being included in the work. And it was an opportunity actually for me to revisit my mother-daughter relationship that's evolved. And it has, you know, for all of us, it changes over time. And I wrote something called Fungus Among Us, which is really about a mother and daughter who have relegated their communication to a grate in the ceiling, you know, good night, mother, good night, you know, and they've stopped really communicating. And so through the course of this very short piece of, it's really a short story or fictoire, I explore kind of how there's a breakthrough in the relationship and how communication can occur again. So it's a modeling through the story of good, how to deal with a ripple, a bad ripple, and how to reinforce good communication. So I was very excited to share that. And certainly my family has wonderful communication, but it was hard won. And it's not always easy to confront things, you know, between each other, but we were really committed to that. And as a result, I feel like there's lots of great stories from my family. They're not always happy about them. I just had something published called The Postcard. And in my haste, I forgot to change the name. So my sister's names were in the post, you know. I got a nice little email from my sister saying, I love this story, but I don't love that you used my name. And I went, oh, I can't believe I sent that draft. You know, so you've got to be careful at that final draft that goes out to publishing to make sure you change the real people's names. So what's happening for me now is I teach at UCLA Extension. I teach pre-production and production. I teach at USC. I'm the script coach for the, it's a intensive for directors from around the world. So I teach a lot of international students writing and producing. And my focus often is on kind of connecting their voice to the marketplace, like identifying what is really their purpose on the planet, you know, without them knowing. I mean, it's really about like, what are you here to say? How can you say it? And then certainly using a lifetime of me falling on the pavement, bloodied, right, and picking myself up, reinventing myself, you know, my skills. And I did go back and get my master's recently. I was just telling my granddaughter, I said, oh my gosh, it was 40 years from the time I graduated high school till when I got my, bachelor's till I got my master's. And I went, wow. So I'm proud of that. I just found out today I got a poem published, which was a very interesting writer. She was like a mentee of Ray Bradbury, and she has a lot of published works. I think, and Elizabeth King, she's E.E. King, and she has always kind of wanted a writer's group. And she lives in a sort of remote part of Utah, and it's very difficult. So she got an international group of writers, all of us together. She creates a prompt. We have written poetry, we're actually working on a kind of a novel. We work under the name Jared X. So we've had 12 poems published so far. This will be the 13th. Anyway, just fun. And my life is full. I'm working on a children's book about interspecies friendship, about animals that share biophosphorescence. And my own film work is going very well. I have different projects that are different stages of packaging. So I'm keeping sort of one foot in the river of art and one foot in the river in the greed and just, you know, or art, you know. So I work in Hollywood and I work in an independent world and as an educator. That's really, and I'm excited about it all. I love it.
Yeah, it does sound exciting. Sounds like a lot of variety there for you, which is just wonderful. Love it.
I finally got comfortable with the idea of being a polyexpressive. So I think it's hard because you want to find, you know, if you're, we're raised singing, dancing, you know, directing, painting, and you have a degree of mastery in it all. You know, it's if you've been living a lifetime and doing all of it, you will have that 10,000 hours that you need to feel somewhat confident and be able to share what you know. So it's challenging and exciting at the same time.
Yeah, it sounds that way. So do you want to tell us a bit about where you've been? What's your story to get to this point?
Thank you again for asking. I grew up in Hollywood, California, in a kind of bohemian environment. Ravi Shankar played in my living room. My father was a doctor to jazz musicians. So we always had interesting international people. My mother danced with an international troupe. And from there, I kind of grew up with a healthy distaste of Hollywood and commercialism. And was an artist, very serious painter, and then went to CalArts and graduated and realized, oh my God, how am I going to make a living? Oh, Hollywood. So I continued to, you know, do my art, which were, I realized it's sort of, I had volumes of like journals and short stories that I never showed anyone. It was just sort of in a closet. And so I continued to do my art and worked on my craft as a screenwriter and worked my way up to being an executive at a studio, Columbia Pictures Television, and was I was directing plays and shepherding new playwrights and trying to bring that work to Los Angeles, where I would work as a producer and director and in development, develop new works and new voices. And that was really fun. One of those things that we've been working on for about 12 years is now a screenplay we're going out with. It was a wonderful story. So we're very excited about that. It's about sort of two parallel paths of two young dancers and kind of what happens when they try to do something that's different than the culture they grew up in. And I, you know, became very interested in, at the same time of being interested in what the form can do, what, you know, what classical writing and craft is all about, also looking at more experimental modes of expression. And have been very involved with the just improvisation, sort of pure Spolin work, and how that can cross over into writing and free association, and then how to organize that into actual work that would then be published. So I guess what I'm saying is that my focus has been really just on expressing myself truthfully and as authentically as I can and trying to find my audience where I can. And I even, about 20 years ago, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. And I said, what's scarier than cancer? Stand-up comedy. And I had promised Steve Allen, the comedian, when at graduation, when I was doing some crazy, you know, he was on stage talking about, oh, artists have to dedicate their life and be miserable to, you know, help culture. And I went, oh, Steve, hello, it's about making money, come on. So I created this crazy character. And then I had actually grown up, he didn't recognize me at all. I was very young when I knew him. But I kind of promised him that I would direct and do stand-up comedy if I didn't direct. So I ended up doing that to help heal myself of breast cancer. And that led to a documentary called Not Afraid to Laugh, and a website, www.breastcancertoolkit.com. And the documentary is now on YouTube. True to my form of being kind of a little bit secretive at times of my own personal work, it took me about 16 years to post the documentary, but it was nominated for a Peabody. It's archived in the Museum of Broadcasting. And It shows me in all various stages of hair, with and without, as well as comedy and touching moments. So I'm very proud of it. And so I've been archiving footage of my own healing, really, and how I use creativity to deal with various trauma. And I hope to revisit the documentary and look at where I am now, 20 years later. But I would say that, you know, even being a part of the ripple effects, 1,000 ripples, I think what Stacy is trying to do in organizing all of the authors from around the world is really to create a moment of healing, a burst of light that can find the darkness in especially the young people who are struggling so much with their identity and how to cope in the world. So my entire life has really been dedicated to finding stories as a storyteller, as well as being a performer in my own way, to reach people and lift them up and shape new perceptions about our world. I mean, most of my projects really are about changing point of view. And not just saying that my point of view is the best, but just to kind of create a crack in a fossilized, rigid opinion about themselves, the world, or relationships.
No, I love that. Well, thank you for sharing that. Do you think you've had various tipping points for change in your life? Like what, having the breast cancer, was that one of the points that you decided to put change in your life?
Absolutely. I mean, I would say that tipping points is a good phrase, because I think when we're inside the storm of change, we don't necessarily see that it's happening or that it's even coming. And there have been a number of tipping or trigger points, you know, where you have an opportunity through trauma or traumatic experience to either stare into the eye of the storm and embrace what the gift of it is, you know, and see what can come through from the other side, and heal old wounds as well. I mean, I do think that every thing that happens to us is really a resonance to an earlier wound, either in our lives or ancestral, ripples, really, to chance to heal and make the world a better place. Mm-hmm. So yes, breast cancer was definitely a spiritual awakening and a life-giving, life-changing experience.
So what about challenges? Have you had those along the way where you felt like just throwing in the towel?
Oh, yeah. I mean, recently I had a slip and fall, which they say in the legal business, where I was just walking into a grocery store, right? Just simple thing. And there was a pool of water, a puddle of water, which I didn't see because it was on the flagstone. They didn't have it marked by yellow, cones. The yellow cones were very far away. And so I went flying through the air. And as I'm flying, I'm thinking, oh my God, how am I going to organize my 100-pound body, right? 80-pound body. So it lands, so I don't break anything. So I kind of, and as I'm flying, I'm like moving my body and I'm figuring how I'm going to land. And yes, I probably broke a couple ribs and I got a concussion. And it was the third concussion I'd had in 3 years. So what happens with consecutive concussions is what's called a traumatic brain injury. So I didn't recognize right away that I was having delayed thought or that I was switching words or was having trouble processing. I mean, I went to a basket weaving class. One of my projects is a Native American. My main character is a Native American, and I wanted to have some authenticity in terms of her experience and be able to be in a community. So I went and I took the basket weaving class, and my cohorts were at the table and they're like, do you have like a brain injury? It's like, I couldn't. It was like, I was, you know, they always make a joke about basket weaving, you know, in a mental institution. It's like, it is the hardest friggin' thing I'd ever tried to do. And I thought, I just can't even remember. Like, this goes under and then it goes over. And I would keep going up to the instructor and see these tiny little baskets. I mean, it's almost as small as a hummingbird's nest. I'm thinking, what is going on with me? And then finally, one of the women says, you know, you should investigate. Either do you have ADHD or some trauma that's happened? And then it hit me. Oh my gosh, I've had 3 concussions. And then I did go meet with a forensic psychologist and bam. So then it was really not so much the concussion, but what occurred was what was PTSD, which was really the neglect that happened as I was laying there on the ground, and my outrage at people, you know, the the people at the store not helping and the standby people, and, you know, people were nice, but they weren't like what I would have done for somebody who had fallen. I mean, like, somebody falls in front of me, it's like, go to them, grab, you know, frozen peas from the grocery section, give it to them. It was just like, it's this lack of caring. So then that triggers earlier traumas where you felt neglect. So again, there was an opportunity of healing, but not before I was incredibly depressed, almost, you know, suicidal, like wanting to throw in the towel. Why bother? What's going on? I can't seem to process. I'm not able to write. I'm not able to do anything. I'm just at home again. And I felt so frustrated and really, really very, very. And so it was through working with this therapist doing cognitive brain therapy where I was again able to reclaim and rewrite my thinking and to actually go back and, you know, use this technology to deal with some of the traumas that had triggered the PTSD in reaction to the concussions. And I'm now better, but it will take a while to get 100% better. Yeah. It's like it's like a silent epidemic, concussions.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny that you talk about that in one way, because it's just suddenly come into my consciousness of a few people around me have had them and what they go through with having traumatic brain injuries. So thank you for sharing that.
My protagonist in the novel that was my master's thesis, she has a traumatic brain injury. So now I've experienced it, and I can even, you know, maybe it's good that I stopped writing for 6 months. I now know what she went through.
Yeah.
But I didn't do it so I would understand what she went through. Trust me, I'm not saying that to our listeners. No, don't go out and injure yourself so you can understand. You can do it with your imagination. Yeah. Research.
What about a vision? Do you have something that keeps you putting one foot in front of the other?
I would have to say that I feel all of us are here collectively to move humanity forward, that we don't see the ripple effect of our actions. And while there's an incredible desire to document our footprint, you know, our creative footprint through either fame or success or recognition, the reality is that it's a kind of a dual push-pull between working towards some sort of recognition or community engagement where you're valued, and then realizing you are just a drop. You are a drop, but the drop is huge. That the effect of your drop collected with all the drops is an ocean. And so that's what keeps me moving forward, is that I am curious about this ocean. I'm curious about the drops that I encounter and collude with and create these little lakes and ponds of thought that can celebrate, you know, together we can celebrate what life can be, right? And support each other. It's really about, one of my stories called Hashem really tells you exactly what, in answer to the question. It's called Finding Hashem. And it's, again, about my own experience with my mother-in-law, who was taken to the emergency room. And she, at the point she was taken to the emergency room, she really resented me, and we had become estranged, been very, very close, but then she resented me because I was the caregiver. Her son was busy with tax season and not really as available, and of course there was some dementia that was going on as well, so there was a lot of anger. But at the end of the day, after this very horrific experience at the emergency room and her being poked and prodded and screaming and nearly, you know, biting people and just being like a wild animal because they were so horrible to her, and they don't have to be. It's just that she was very difficult and required, you know, restraints basically, which is just, you can't even imagine restraints on someone that you love. But at the end of the day, we got back to her place and she just said, I was so scared. She said, I was so scared. And I said, you were scared. She said, yes, they were so bad to me. And I just basically listened. You know, I just listened. And at the end of the night, we just kind of held each other hand. And it's in the space of somebody saying, I hurt, and somebody else saying, yes, you hurt. You know, yes, that was terrible. That's kind of where I think where God lives, or that way that we need to be there for each other. So that's what keeps me going, is the recognition that, you know, even when I was going through breast cancer, that I was doing something, creating this documentary or document of my experience through stand-up comedy, that was something greater than my own pain, right? That I was going to contribute But I got to explore what was going on with me, as I'm totally fascinated with myself, and and share that with the world. With my, I had an art teacher once who said, well, it's through the specific is the universal, so trust yourself, follow your own instincts. That's what keeps me going, is just this incredible curiosity. What makes us tick? What makes everyone want to be here or want not to be here? And how do we turn that corner of from not wanting to be here to wanting to be here, you know, through helping each other, through just the little teeny things that we can do to make someone lift up their spirit. You know, I mean, another poem that I love that I wrote was really about an experience, and a lot of my work is triggered by my true life, but then exaggerated for, you know, for art. There was a homeless guy in the rain outside of this Indian restaurant, and my family was inside having a holiday meal, and he was outside sort of looking in, and I just felt compelled to get up and go talk to him or hug him or something. So I just sort of stood next to him. I said, "You okay?" And he sort of nodded. And I said, "Would you like to sing Amazing Grace?" And he said, "Yes." Yeah. So we just sang Amazing Grace. And then I hugged him, praying I wouldn't get, you know, something from him, and then went back inside. And so maybe singing Amazing Grace kept him alive one more night, or gave him faith in humanity, or like buying a hamburger for the guy, you know, that comes in to decide, "I don't have money to pay for this." It's like, maybe it just goes to drugs, maybe not. Maybe it's just, again, a drop in the bucket of what humanity can be, you know? Mm. That's, I think we're here to represent the possibility of what we can be.
Yeah.
That keeps me going.
What about the future? What's exciting for you looking forward to the future?
I think what I love is that I think when we turn 55 to 65, there's a retrospective that goes on. And I'll share something in a minute about sort of what I think about each passages, you know, which decade sort of represents. But I think for me, I stumbled upon through a friend in Facebook, which I think is great, a way to connect with old friends and, you know, create new alliances. And I saw a picture of myself from when I was at CalArts as an artist, just working on a big project with a group of people. We were building a mud hut, you know, African mud hut for, it was just really fun. We were in the African dance ensemble. And I looked at myself and I said, dang, that's the same person. I mean, I'm wiser, I'm a little beat up, but that really is the same person. The sparkle is still there, the desire and curiosity and self-doubt and, you know, the desire to gain confidence, it's all there. It was all there. And that made me feel like I am the same person. So what I'm looking forward to is enjoying the same person that I am and sharing what I know with my students. I love teaching. It's so much fun. And they're always surprising me. And I like being able to be surprised. I think that's super fun. And I guess I'm looking forward to what's going to happen with the digital arts in terms of the amalgamation of, again, poetry, image, moving parts. What's going to happen here next with us? And then also, how are we going to manage our technology so that it doesn't manage us? Like, how are we going to defeat the kind of addictive nature of technology? The idea that it is kind of the hype culture. I did a podcast talking about hype culture and art recently, and I was interviewed talking about that. I think that's a real serious issue for us. So I'm looking forward to confronting with my art and with my collaborators these new frontiers, but as well as how we are going to use technology in a successful, life-promoting way. Versus something that's going to deaden us, drug us, and take us away from ourselves. So that's what I'm looking forward to.
Yeah.
How it's going to go down and what my part in it is.
Oh, it just sounds exciting now. I love it. All right. Let's have a change in pace and do the speed round.
Okay.
All right. What's your favorite book?
You will not believe this. It's A Prehistoric Man, a book I got when I was like 12 for Christmas. Just images of prehistoric life, what it was imagined like. So I still go back to that.
Oh, I love that. Who's a mentor figure that's helped you the most?
I mean, my art teacher definitely is someone that I think is an incredible guide. She was 90 when she passed, but she was still painting. And I would say it's really my mother, actually. My mother, if I have to say it's anyone. She does it all. She's 85 and is still painting and drawing and creating and dancing and singing and just, you know, amazing.
What daily ritual works best for you?
In what way do you mean ritual?
It could be like a routine that you have, or some people do meditations or journaling, just something that you might do every day that works for you.
I think being quiet when you first wake up and just collecting yourself, whether it's through meditation or journaling, I kind of do a little bit of both, or drawing. Yeah, that, I think it's just that quiet, the quieting down. That's really important. I mean, I have several spaces in my environment where I can just go to either paint or draw, or mostly just, I really think it's this, as simple as just sitting quietly, you know, crossing your arms over your chest and just letting the thoughts run through your brain and getting clear, letting it cycle through, seeing what's most important for me now to attend to. I think prayer is important. So I will do that too, but it's not your traditional prayer, I would say.
What about a favorite food?
Oh God, I love food. I mean, just food with a capital F. I don't know if I have chocolate. I'm sure keeps reappearing, but I was thinking about that the other day, about how much I love. It goes in waves, I must say. I do happen to like ice cream. Hi there. Yeah. So I guess goat chocolate ice cream. If I have my last meal before I'm electrocuted.
That's so cool.
I don't think that's happening unless it's in my mind in a mystery that I'm writing.
Okay. Do you like the country or the city?
Both. I love both.
What piece of advice have you got to give to others to help them make change in their life?
Listen carefully and find one thing that you both can do that's fun together. Like my husband and I basically saved our marriage. Not that it was going down the tubes, but we really, really invigorated it by going to an improv camp in Sister Bay, which is a small town. It was just so much fun. We just had a great time. So I think allowing the fun in, you know, let the fun fly in.
All right, last question. If you had a time machine, what would you go back and do differently or tell your former self?
I think I would really listen to when I wanted to do something badly, and not listen to the advice that other people gave me not to do it. So I would say, hey, you really want to do this. Like I recently read an interview with Carol Burnett, and her agent said, oh, you know, we've got this great gig where you're going to make $3,000 a week, and you know, you're going to do this show, and da da da. And she said, yeah, well, there's this tiny little off Broadway show, which is called The Mattress or something. Anyway, it's the wonderful Princess and the Pea story, which was done as a musical. Anyway, it made her career. She followed what she loved. So there are a couple of times in my life where I didn't quite follow that instinct, where I just kind of was trying to choose the practical course versus the joyous course. And yeah, sometimes we have to make practical choices, but I think if you can manage it and you can make an impractical choice that supports your joy, do it for a little while. See if you can build on that, because I do feel that will lead to one's success, yeah, financially and spiritually.
Well, thank you so much for your valuable time today, Devo. Would you like to give us the best place to contact you, and we'll end it there?
Absolutely. I did want to say that I do have a book that is out called Dating Your Character, A Sexy Guide to Screenwriting for Film and Television. And you can get it through www.stairwaypress.com/bookstore at Dating Your Character for the hard copy. And then you can also get an ebook at ccwc.papertrell.com ID00510004 for the ebook. But they can reach me if they'd like at DEV as in Victor O coaching, COACHING, at gmail.com. I do have a company called The Script Broker, which helps writers of all formats, right? You know, the script and novel broker, connect with agents or develop pitches. So that if they need pitch coaching or they want to talk about, you know, where they are in their career, I'm happy to give, you know, if they use your name, certainly 15 minutes of free advice to give them some at least, you know, what I think might be the next step.
Oh, excellent. Thank you so much for that. I'm sure our listeners will love that. And okay. I will put the details of your book in the description for the podcast as well.
Oh, you've been lovely. Thank you so, so much. And I would love to find out more what you're doing, but that's not the purpose of the podcast. So where can I go to find out what you're up to?
LeanneBlaney.com. That's my website.
All right. Wonderful. Thank you. I did go there a little bit before, but I look forward to future encounters and any way I can be of help. Thank you so much for reaching out.
Igniters, Devo is comfortable with being a polyexpressive, which is awesome, and she uses creativity to deal with various trauma. If you want to contact Devo, you can email her at devocoaching@gmail.com. Or if you want more on a book, go to www.stairwaypress.com/bookstore/dating-your-character. For more on balance in your life, you can go to my website, www.leanneblaney.com, and there you can purchase my latest book, Balance.